Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning at the very bottom of Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis. We are continuing with the issue of inheritance, specifically the section of the Mishnah that says that a person inherits his mother. On the outside margin, and of course we ought to remind you before beginning the shiur, it's recommended to print out the daf. On the outside margin, in our nosei topic heading, min olon, from where do we know, number one, de ben yoresh es imoy, and number two, de ben koidem le bas benichse ha'em, kemoy benichse ha'av, that a son comes before a daughter, preempts a daughter, in the property of one's mother, just like we know that a son preempts a daughter in the property of one's father. In the Gemara, V'ho'ish es imo v'chulei, mino hani mili, from where do we know that a son is yoreshes imo, and that the son comes before the daughter in his mother's property? Tetonu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source. As you can see, it's framed, and the source cites a pasuk: V'chol bas yoreshes nachlo mimatois b'nei Yisrael. The pasuk says a daughter who inherits from tribes of Israel. The word matois is plural. Heich bas yoreshes shnei matois. How is it that a daughter is inheriting two tribes? Ela zu sheoviha mishevet echad v'ima mishevet acher umesu. We're talking about a case where a daughter, a woman, had parents from two different tribes. The parents passed away. V'yorshoson, and she inherited her parents. She inherited her father who was from one shevet, one tribe, and her mother, who was from another tribe. That would explain the plural in the pasuk that was found at the top line. The Ainli Elo Bas. And from here we see a daughter inheriting her mother. Ben Minayin. From where would we know that a son inherits his mother? Up till now, we've only seen the son inheriting his father. But from where would we know that a son inherits his mother? Amris Kal V'chomer. We can apply Kal V'chomer logic as follows. Uma bas shahiro koicha benichse ha'av, yofe koicha benichse ha'im, a daughter whose strength in inheriting her father we know is weak relative to a son, in that when there is a son, the daughter does not inherit in nichse ha'av, yofe koicha benichse ha'im, we see that she inherits from her mother's property, as we saw above, that a daughter is one who inherits from her mother's property. Ben sheyofe koichai benichse ha'av, a son whose strength is great in regards to his father's property. So we know at this point that a son has increased strength over a daughter in one aspect, in the father's property. Eino din sheyofe koichai benichse ha'av. Then all the more so, it would stand to reason that the son has strength, has inheritance strength with regard to his mother's property. Umimokoim shevos, and from the point that you originated, that you came from. Ma lahalon, just like in the case of father's property, ben koidem labas, the son preempts the daughter. Af kan, so too in mother's property, ben koidem labas. The son will preempt the daughter. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elozer, Rabbi Yossi, Omru, Mishum, Rabbi Zecharia ben Hakatzov. We will now see a different opinion with regard to son and daughter in mother's property. He says, and we'll emphasize, this is Rabbi Zecharia ben Hakatzov's opinion. This is an opinion that the Gemara, several daf from now, will make reference to. His opinion is, Echad haben v'echad habas, shovin benichse ha'em. Son and daughter are equal with regard to mother's property. In other words, in a case where a woman dies leaving a son and a daughter, they will split the property equally. My taima, the Gemara asks, what's the reason for this? Dayoi labo min hadin liois kanidoin. It is sufficient, or it is limiting, that which is derived through a kal v'chomer, that's something that's derived min hadin, the derivative cannot be any stronger than the origin. Namely, the son, with regard to mother's property, is derived from daughter with regard to mother's property. What do we know about mother's property when there's a daughter? We know that she inherits. That's what the pasuk said at the top. Therefore, all we can say about a son with regard to mother's property is that he too will inherit. But we can't say that the son will have greater strength than the daughter in mother's property. The Gemara asks, V'tana kamo loy dorish dayo? We're about to start a long question, as you can see indicated in the space between the Gemara and the Tosfos. We have a question that will be lasting approximately 6 lines. The principle that governed Rabbi Zecharia ben Hakatzov was dayo labo min adin lios kanidon, that a derivative can be no stronger than the origin. And as we said, the son is a piece of derivative information derived from daughter in the context of mother's property. This principle is founded on a Torah source. Therefore, this arouses a question: how is it that the Tana Kama doesn't seem to acknowledge the Dayo principle? We saw that the Tana Kama said that a son in mother's property is in fact stronger than daughter in mother's property. But by saying that, you're not accepting the Dayo principle. In the Gemara, V'tanakama loy dorish dayo. Could it be that the first opinion in the Tanaic source at the top doesn't accept dayo? V'ho dayo d'oraisahu d'sanyo. We now see a Tanaic source that serves as the basis for the dayo principle. What we're going to see here is a proposal that suggests how far I can go with kal v'chomer reasoning, but as a result of information provided in Psukim, we will see that we will not go with the kal v'chomer reasoning. We will limit ourselves and not go all the way. Before we read the Gemara inside, let us share a little background. In the Torah, the story is told concerning Miriam, the sister, the elder sister of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Torah relates that she spoke about her brother, comments that we regard in the broad context of Lashon Hara. In the context of our shir, we're not going to get into the fine points of Hilchus Lashon Hara and how what appears to be a transgression on the part of Miriam really is a very fine point that needs analysis in and of its own. However, for our purposes, we're going to refer to that incident as an incident of Loshon Hara. And as a result of that, she experienced Tzoras. Tzoras being the punishment for Loshon Hara. And as a result of Miriam's Tzoras, the Jews in the Midbar waited a period of 7 days before they continued their travel. We can say that it was an act of consideration, of respect for Miriam. All the same, we see that she suffered punishment for 7 days. Her Loshon Hara affront was something that upset the Kodesh Baruch Hu, upset God. The Pasuk and the source now, we'll first start reading the source. Tesanya, midin kal v'chomer ketzad. What would kal v'chomer reasoning have led us to believe? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. V'aviha yorok yorak b'foneha. Halo ticholeim shivas yomim. The spirit of this pasuk is that if one's father became infuriated, angered, was victim of an offense, a father would get angry for 7 days. Kal v'chomer l'shchina arba asar. If an affront to one's father would be considered a 7 day punishment period, what about an affront to the Shechina? One would say, oh, that would be worth 14 days, at least twice as much. And yet, we see in the Miriam story that though there was an affront to the Shechina, to the Divine Presence, they were delayed only for 7 days, just like an affront to a father. The father being the source. We wanted to make a kal v'chomer from father and say that if offending a father, the offense would be one of 7 days. If offending the Shechina, then one would think it should be 14 days. But since Shechina would be considered derivative information, we cannot say that it would be any stricter than the source. So if the source, namely father, 7 days, the affront to the Shechina won't be considered any greater, and it too will be only 7 days. And that's what the source concludes and says, Elo dayo labo min adin. It is sufficient that that which is derivative from kal v'chomer lios kanidon shall be treated the same way as the source. At this point, though, we end our question. How is it then that the Tanakhama will extend the son's strength in mother's property beyond the source of his inheriting in mother's property, namely daughter inheriting in mother's property, and say that the son is able to preempt the daughter there too? The Gemara answers, Be'almo Dorish Dayo. In general, the Tanakhama will accept the Dayo principle. The Shaini Hocha, in this particular case of inheritance, the situation is different. The Omar Kra Mimatois. We saw this expression used at the top line, and this you can see with arrows that appear in the margin on the left-hand side of the Gemara text. In this case, we have the term matos used. And as a result of that, makish mate ho'em lemate ho'av. The Torah is telling us to compare tribe of mother to rules that we know in the realm of tribe of father. Ma mate ho'av ben koidim lebas, just like in the realm of tribe of father, their son preempts daughter, af mate ho'em ben koidim lebas. At this point in the Gemara, after telling us that in Mat Ha'aim, and from tribe of mother Ben Kodem Labas, the son preempts the daughter. We're now going to see a series. We have this indicated with our double underline. Series of halachic rulings. Some of them are attempted and some of them are actual. If we just glance ahead in the Gemara, we will notice the names that are double underlined. We have Rav Nitai, Rav Tavla, Rav Huna Bar Chiya. Next to each name that's double underlined, we have another word that's dashed underlined. In the case of Rav Nitai, you'll see the word Savar, means he thought to do, but didn't actually rule. And by next to Rabbi Tavla, you see Ovad. He ruled. And afterwards, Rav Huna Bar Chiya, once again, Savar. All of these names, which are double underlined, have in common the issue of how to treat daughter in the context of son, when they are together, son and daughter, in mother's property. And we'll note again that Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsov, he was of the opinion that in mother's property, son and daughter are treated the same. So the Gemara relates. Rav Nitai, Savar Lemevad Uvdok, Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsov. He thought to paskin like Rabbi Zechariah, and Ben and Bas, son and daughter, would inherit equally in mother's property. Amar Leh Shmuel, Keman, who do you think that you're going to be paskining like? Ke Zechariah? Ephes Zechariah. Namely, he is not to be relied upon. The Rashbam says at the end of the narrow lines, Klomar Botlo She'ein Halacha Kamoisai, that the Halacha does not follow him. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Tavla Ovad Uvdo Kerebi Zechariah ben Akatsov. He paskin like him, giving a daughter equal inheritance in her mother's property along with her brother, namely the son of that particular woman. Amalei Rav Nachman, my high, what's this? Amalei, so Rav Tavla says, the Omar Rabbi Rav Chinino Bar Shalmiyo Mishmei Derav Halochok Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsov. So Rabbi Tavla was relying on Rav Chinino's ruling that one should paskin like Rabbi Zechariah. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman responded, says, Zil Ahader Boch, retract the Eloi, and if you don't retract, then Mafikno Loch Rav Chinino Bar Shalmiyo Meunech. This is an expression, we can give a literal translation, but you'll have to take it a little differently. He says, if you don't retract, then I will extract Rav Chinina, upon whom you were relying, from your ears. Namely, don't go like that. The Rashbam explains that this expression, Mafitno Loch Meunech, I'll take him out of your ears, means I'll put you in excommunication. Mishamtino Loch, he says. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Huna Bar Chiya, Sovar Lemevad Uvdo, Kerabi, Zechariah ben Akatsov. Once again, we see here, as we saw above, he thought maybe to paskin like Rabbi Zechariah, to rule like him. Amar Leh Rav Nachman, my high. And Rav Nachman, as we saw above, responded the same way. Hey, what's this? Amar Leh, the Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav, Halacha ke Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsov. In this case, Rav Huna Bar Chiya cites Rav Huna, it's a different Rav. He cites him as the source for paskening like Rav Zechariah. Omar Leh, so Rav Nachman said, Ashlach Leh, should I send to Rav Huna that you're relying on him for this psak? The Rashbam underneath the Gemara, Ashlach Leh, l'Rav Huna vodienu, should I send to Rav Huna and inform him, Shata Oimer Kein Mishmo, that you say thusly in his name, Vo'eda im emeshu, Shama Rav Huna Kein, by sending him this message, I'll then get a response and see if what you're saying is really true. Well, after Rav Huna Bar Chiya heard this threat, if you will, Ichsef, he became embarrassed. the Rashbam says on this, Ichsif, he became embarrassed. The Shema Chozar Boy Rav Huna, Oy Lohoya Somech B'Shmuaso. Could be Rav Huna Bar Chiya entertains the possibility that Rav Huna may have backed out, or maybe what he heard wasn't so reliable in the first place. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman says, Ashto ki noch nafshe de Rav Huna, if Rav Huna would have died, itrisis lekabli, you wouldn't have backed out. But now that Rav Huna is still around, you are embarrassed, and hence there's a weakness in your words. Ve'ihu keman savro, Rav Nachman, who wasn't willing to accept this approach to halachic ruling, namely, he wasn't willing to accept the Rabbi Zecharia approach. Who is he basing himself on? Kiha de Rav Ushmuel. He's basing himself on Rav and Shmuel, the Amri Chavayu, that they say, Ein halacha k'Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatzov. It's interesting to note here that in Rav Huna Bar Chiya's version of things, he cited Rav Huna, who cited Rav as going like Rabbi Zecharia, but Rav Nachman seemed to feel very confident that Rav never said anything like that. And hence he feels free to cite Rav along with Shmuel as paskening unlike Rabbi Zecharia. Namely, that a son will preempt a daughter in mother's property. Mistamech fi'ozil Rabbi Yanai akasfo de Rav Simloi Shamei. Little story here, where we find Rabbi Yanai, who was an elderly man in this story, and was of poor eyesight. So he was walking along while resting on the shoulder of Rabbi Simloi Shamei, his servant. V'osi Rabbi Yehuda Nesio L'Apayu. And Rabbi Yehuda Nesio was coming toward them from the opposite direction. Omar Lei, the Shamash, namely Rav Simloi, said, Bar Inish the Osa Lekib Lino, the man that's coming opposite us, who Yoi Vegulse Yoi. He is literally pleasant, but it means he's an Odom Choshev, he's an important individual. And his clothing show his importance as well. Namely, he has the clothing that are characteristic of a Talmud Chacham. The Rashbam suggests a second pshat, and that he was saying that he's wearing nice clothing, literally nice clothing. The Gemara continues, Kimoto Legabe, when they met up, Goshesha, Rabbi Yanai felt the clothing. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yanai said, Dein Shiurei Kesak. This clothing is, the clothing that he's wearing isn't of high quality. It's thick and rough type of garment that has the same halachic status of sak. Sak is different than the standard beged, if you will, in terms of the shi'ur, the dimensions for kabbalas tuma, for receiving ritual impurity. The beged, stam, regular beged, is 3 by 3 tvachim. A sack cloth is measured 4 by 4 tvachim, indicating that it's of lesser quality. It could very well be, as you'll see from the hemshich of the Gemara, from the continuation of the Gemara, a reference to something a bit deeper than that. But for our purposes, we'll continue. Ba minei. Rav Yehuda posed a question. Minayin le ben shekoidem lebas benichse ho'im. From where do we know that a son preempts a daughter in mother's property? Omar Lei, Rabbi Yanai said, Dichtiv Matois. We see, as we saw at the very top of the page, the plural word for tribes, matois, makish mate ho'ain lemata ho'av. We're to compare the rules concerning mother's tribe from what we know concerning father's tribe. Ma mate ho'av ben koidim labas, just like in inheritance of father, the son preempts the daughter. Af mate ho'ein ben koidim labas, so too in inheritance from mother's tribe, namely mother's property and property that comes from her side, the son preempts the daughter. That was Rav Yanai's response to Rav Yehuda's question. Omar Lei, Rav Yehuda says back, I ma mateho av b'chor noitel pishnayim af mateho aim b'chor noitel pishnayim. If you carry the analogy or the comparison further, then it would come out as follows, that just like when a son is inheriting from his father, there are halachas concerning firstborn inheritance, namely that a bechor receives a double portion, are we to understand that a son who is a firstborn will inherit a double portion in his mother's property? In asking this question, one can assume that that's not the case. Rav Yanai heard the question, and he got upset. Amar Lei L'Shamei, Rav Yanai said to his servant, to his shamish, we saw him before, that was Rav Simloi. He said, Gold, Leis Dein Tzavi L'Meilaf. Gold is, draw me away from here, let's go. This one, Les Dane, this one is not interested in learning. Les Dane, Tzavi, Tzavi means Rotze, doesn't want Lemelaf to learn. The Rashbam at the top says, Les Dane, Rotze, Lemelaf. Well, we saw the in our text was Tzavi, Lemelaf. Elo, Lahakshis, Dvorim, Sheinon, Srichem. He's just interested in asking questions that you don't really need to ask. Klomar, Dedover Kalhu Litarets. The answer to this supposed question is so easily known, is so easily answered. The Gemara, though, in its characteristic curiosity, asks, well, how do you know that the son does not get Pishnayim, a firstborn son, with regard to mother's property, does not get a double portion? V'taimomai. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to notice a geometric form. Before we go further in the Gemara, as we await the answer, let us glance at the side. We have a topic heading here, Nosei Hemshech, a continuation of the topic we started with. Ein b'chor notel pishnayim b'nichseo ein. We are, as we've been saying, a son does not get double portion if he's a b'chor. Even though he's a b'chor, he doesn't get a double portion in nichseo ein. Bein im medubar b'bochor she nosa. Whether we talk about a case of a b'chor is a man who never was married. Who did this man, this bochor, marry? Whether it be a case of a bochor that was nosa almona, a woman who had was a widow, or basula, or whether we talk about a case of be'almoin shenosa basula. An almon is a man who was a widower who married a girl who was never married. In all of these cases, we're going to see that there firstborn son will not inherit a double portion in the mother's property. The triangles represent a craw. It surrounds the expression craw, and you can see as you go down the omud, you see three of these triangles. Psukim, they represent psukim, be'inyan pishnayim b'nichsei ho'em. Regarding double portion when dealing with mother's property. Continuing in the Gemara now. So we had asked the question, how do you know that a firstborn son does not get pishnai minichsu? Omar Abaye, Omar Kro, Bechol Asher Imotzelo. This pasuk is coming from the section dealing with Bechor, firstborn receiving double portion. It says in this pasuk, from all that is in his possession, namely in a father's possession, and the father just died, the son, firstborn, will get double portion. And the Gemara makes a diuk, makes an inference. Loi v'loi lo. Namely, the concept of pishnayim is applicable only loi, male form, when dealing with father's property, and not law, female form, not applicable in mother's property. The Gemara asks, the Emo Hani Mili, maybe it is so that there's no Pishnayim in the following case, Bochur Shenosa Almona. That's maybe in a case where the mother in this question is a widow. Namely, she had been married before. Namely, she had sons from another man. Therefore, this firstborn is not her, what's called reishis oino, her first strength, or her firstborn. Avol bochur shenosa besula. However, if you had a case of a man who was never married, who married a woman who was never married, it's a first marriage for both of them. Hochi nami deshokil. So, maybe in such a case, their firstborn would get a double portion in her property, in the mother's property. The answer is no. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Omar Kro. The pasuk, in the case of Pishnayim, says, Reishis oinoi, literally his first strength, the father's firstborn, oinoi veloi oino, namely the firstborn of a father is the only time the halacha of pishnayim applies, and not when you're dealing with firstborn of the mother, namely the firstborn of the mother. Her firstborn male son does not get pishnayim in her property. The Gemara asks, "Hahu, the pasuk of Reishis Oino is needed for something else. Hahu mi boyole la bo achar nefilim, a son that's born to a man who appears on the scene after miscarriages. Deleheve bechor lenachla. That even though this man had miscarriages, his wife bore other children, but they didn't live. And after the miscarriages, a healthy child was born. That son is considered a firstborn with regard to inheritance. One might note that firstborn who comes after Nephilim is considered a firstborn only with regard to rules of inheritance and not with regard to another halacha that applies to a firstborn child, a firstborn if he's a male, namely the realm of Pidyon HaBen, the realm of redemption. Namely, if a woman had a miscarriage, and after that had a healthy child, the healthy child will not experience Pidyon HaBen, because he's not considered a Bechor, a firstborn, with regard to the womb. However, with regard to inheritance, the standard is different. The firstborn living child is privy to, has rights to receiving a double portion. The Gemara explains this. Mi sheliboy dova olav. The word ono, racious ono, is associated with the expression aninus, one who has pain over, cries over, if they should die. Mi sheliboy dova olav. He's considered a firstborn with regard to Nachla, Yotza Zeh, to the exclusion of miscarriages, Shein Liboy Dova Olav. Even though a miscarriage is a very unpleasant experience, it doesn't result in halachas of Avelus in a mourning period. Therefore, when you see the Pasuk Rashis Ono, we say Rashis Oinoi receives a double portion, what we're really saying is that child who is the first one that would result in Avelus, namely a healthy child, he receives a double portion as opposed to miscarriages. But at this point, we're in a question position, namely, how can you suggest, as we did a few lines ago, that Rashis Ono is the source to exclude double portion in mother's property when this very same Pasuk, Rashis Ono, is used to teach me a different halacha, namely that there is pishnayim, there is double portion for that child which is born after miscarriages? The Gemara answers, Im kein lema kra ki hu Rashis Oin. If the Pasuk was simply telling me halachas of firstborn double portion after miscarriages, it could have said this, ki hu reishis oin, my oinoi. Why this use of terminology, oinoi? Shma mino tarti. We can derive both halachas from this expression. Both halachas, namely, that there is double portion only in father's property, not in mother's property, and also the halacha concerning double portion for the first healthy firstborn. But still, Vakati Emo Hani Mili, I might think that all of what we said was in the case of Almoin Shenosa Besula, in the case of a widower who married a first time marriage on the woman's side. Maybe then we will apply our teaching that there is no double portion in the mother's property. Let us take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam, you'll find where there's an asterisk a little more than halfway down the narrow lines. V'eimo hani mili d'memaet kra, that the pasuk is exclusionary. D'omar oinoi, d'ko'omar oinoi, veloi oino, hochi ko'amar, imhu bochur shenosa almona. If you're dealing with a first time marriage for the man who married a widow, the rachis oinoi, noitel pishnai bocholashi motzilo, avolo oino, but not in her property. Shimhu almoin shenosa besula. If you're dealing with a widower that married a first-time marriage for the woman, di'ika oino l'chud, where in that equation you have only her first strength, eino noitel bo pishnayim, aval hecha dehave gam oinoi, kagon bochur shenosa besula. But where you have the first strength on both sides, Emo, I might think, Migu to Shokil Pishnayim B'Shaloh, Shokil Nami Pishnayim B'Shaloh. Just like he takes a double portion from the father, he will be able to take a first portion from the mother. Tahavi B'chor L'Nachlo Bein Lav Bein Leim. He's considered a firstborn for both the father and the mother. Deleko leukmi miuta de oinoi veloi oino. Maybe we should suggest that the miut, that the limitation or the exclusionary approach will apply elo b'mai didomi l'miuti tfei. Kagon hecho doleko reishis own mishnei tzdodim. The limitation approach, that would be where there's one side of the equation where there is what to limit, to exclude. But if on both sides of the equation there is firstness, maybe there the son would get a double portion in the mother's property. Let us turn back to the Gemara and read again. The emo, the akati emo hani mili, maybe this limitation of son not receiving double portion in mother's property, that would be in the case of almoin shenosa besula. And certainly in the case of a bochur shenosa almona, where it's not her first strength. Avol bochur shenosa besula, but a case where it's a first marriage for both the mother and father, hochi nami deshokil. Maybe in this case he should get a double portion in the mother's property. Elo Omar Rova. Omar Kro Loi Mishpat Habachora. From this pasuk we see Mishpat Habachora Laish, that the rules of firstborn apply to a man, Veloi Mishpat Habachora Laisha. But there's no firstborn rules of inheritance, namely double portion li'isha, when it comes to a woman, when it comes to inheriting from mother's property. We continue in the Gemara with the issue of v'ho'ish es ishtoi. We say, the Mishnah says that a man inherits from his wife. Mino hani mili. From where do we know this as far as the Torah is concerned? The Tana Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source here, but before we go any further, it is worth noting that we have in the space between the Gemara and the Tosis, namely to the right hand side of the Gemara text, a Roman numeral number 1, and a little bit further down, a Roman numeral number 2. These represent approaches to this halacha that a husband inherits his wife. The Gemara continues. She'eroi, zu ishtoi. This is from a pasuk as quoted on the side, Bamidbor, Perikhov Zayin Posukin Aleph. We noted a few dapim ago when the Gemara was dealing with father inheriting from his son, citing the same posuk, the same word, and taking it differently. The word Sheiro, there, the Tana was referring to father. We had mentioned at the time, when we saw that initially, that there would be an alternative approach to darshaning this. This we saw in Daf Kuf Ches Omid Beis, that such a Tana would appear that darshans Sheiro differently. Namely, as we see here, Sheiro, a reference to one's wife. The source continues, Melameid Shehabal Yoresh Es Ishtoi. Yochol Afhi Tiroshenu. Could it be that a wife inherits her husband? Talmud Lomar, Viorash Oisa. Who Yoresh Oisa? The Ain he Yoreshes Oso. Pasuk says that he inherits her, but she does not inherit from him. The Gemara asks, Vaha Kroi Lav Hochiksivi. If you look at the Pasuk, it doesn't indicate that. The simple pshat of the Pasuk would show that she inherits from him. The pasuk reads as follows. And this you can follow by looking at what we've indicated on the inside margin, where the pasuk appears, Bamidbar Chof Zayin, pasuk Yud Aleph. The pasuk reads, Ve'im ein achim le'oviv unesatem es nachlosoi l'she'eroi ha'kroivo hilov mi'mishpachtoi. That if there are no brothers to the father, we have a person who passed away, and we took him in, earlier indicated that he did not have closer relatives, and this pasuk says this deceased doesn't even have uncles, so that it says that you give his property lishe'eroi hakarov elov, give it to his she'ero. Now if she'ero is interpreted as wife, it's basically saying give his property to his wife. Mimishpachto viorash osa. Hence the Gemara is asking here that the simple reading of the pasuk says that you would be giving his property to the she'eroi, to his wife. To get out of this problem, we're going to see Abaye offering an approach. His approach, though, will arouse the objection of Rava, and then Rava will give his opinion. Omar Abaye, Tritz Hochi. Read the pasuk, or reread the pasuk as follows. Unesatem es nachlosoi lakoroiv elov. Notice how he skipped over the she'era word as it appeared in the original pasuk, where, as you can see on your inside margin, it said unesatem es nachloso lishero. Here we're skipping that, and we're saying unesatem es nachloso as lakoroiv elov, that you give the deceased property to whoever is close to him at this point. She'eroi, as far as one's wife is concerned, viorash oisa, he will inherit her. Rashbam points out that the appearance of she'ero signifies a separate topic. Namely, that one's wife is to be inherited by her husband. A very choppy way of approaching the pasuk. Omar Rava, Sakino Harifa, Mifsike Kroi. Sharp knife chops up the pasuk. There's a little irony in this particular Gemara, in that the term Sakino Harifa is actually used in a complimentary fashion, describing Rava himself in Maseches Chulin. But in this context, Rava is using it in a questionable way, derogatory fashion, if you will. He's referring to Abaye's attempt at rereading the pasuk in this rather choppy fashion, as a sharp knife who knows how to chop up psukim. Elo Omar Rava. Therefore, Rava comes up with his approach, which also involves some movement in the pasuk, but it doesn't involve movement of entire words. Hochi ko'omar. Unesatem es nachlas she'eroi loi. And you'll give the inheritance or the property of she'eroi, of his wife, lo, to him. How did he come up with this reading? So when you look in the pasuk, we had the words in the original pasuk, unesatem, just like he has, es, also the same. The next word, nachlas, in the original pasuk, you had the word nachlas with a vav at the end, nachlosoi. So you take off the vav, put that off on the side for a moment, and the next word in the original pasuk was lishe'ero. What does Rava have as the next word? He has the word she'ero. He's taken off the lamed from that. What did we have on the side a moment ago? We had a Vov. Now we take off the Lamed. So you have two letters that we took off on the side. That's a Lamed and a Vov. And that creates a new word, Loi, as Rava reads in his version. The Gemara points out, Kosava, Rava is of the opinion, Gurin, you can take off, you can detract from, Umoisifin, and then add the Darshan. And as a result of that, we came up with this approach of Unasatem es Nachlas Sheiroi Loi. And we did that by taking off the Vav and the Lamed from the original Pasuk of Unasatem es Nachlosoi L'She'eroi. You can see between the lines we've included the original Pasuk and offered little circles around the Vav and the Lamed. One has to be aware that these methods of approaching Psukim have to come from some form of oral tradition that these great scholars had. Heaven forbid that one opens up a Chumash on his own and attempts to do things like this. That would be absolute heresy. And the Talmud has survived this many years only because we're constantly aware of the fact that it comes from oral traditions that date back, way back, tracing back to the times of prophets, back to the times of Maimed Har Sinai itself. The Gemara continues. V'hai Tano, namely Rabbi Yishmoel, whom we haven't seen yet, who appears a little bit later, Maisi Lo Mehocha. He will derive this halacha that a Baal, a husband, inherits his wife from the following. Tesanya. We have a source that continues till the top of Kuf Yud Beis Omid Aleph. The Pasuk that opens up the source comes from Bamidbor Chov Zayin Pasuk Yud Aleph V'yorash Oysa Melameid Shehabal Yoresh Es Ishtoi Divrei Rabbi Akiva. This approach was referred to in the source just above. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Einoi Tzorech, I don't have to darshan from She'eroi, because I, Rabbi Shmuel, am of the opinion that She'ero is, like we saw earlier in the Perek, is a reference to father. Harehu Oimer. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel comes and presents a series of psukim. This series of psukim, as you can see with the double underline, which is one of the series markings, will eventually lead up to the conclusion that a husband inherits his wife. The analysis of this series will follow in the Gemara on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. But for our purposes, we will first present the psukim as they come. So Rabbi Shmuel goes on to say, Harehu Omer v'chol bas yereshes nachlo mimatois b'nei Yisrael li'echod mimishpachas v'chulei. The continuation of the posuk is describing the Jews initially when they left Mitzrayim and were about to enter Eretz Yisrael. It's informing us that a girl, a woman, a bas, a female, who's yoreshes nachla, who is in the position of inheriting. Namely, she's a daughter in a family where there are no sons. So as such, she's first in line to inherit. So she's called a bas yoreshes nachla. When she chooses a mate, when she chooses one to marry, she has to choose someone from Mishpachas. The continuation of the Pasuk indicates Mishpachas Beis Avia, from a mate from the same tribe as her father. Behasovas Habal Akosuv Medaber. Hasova literally means to move something over. to transfer location. The pasuk is alluding to a husband who would be transferring ownership from one to another. Namely, and if the mate of this bas yoreshes, of this girl who's inheriting her property, would come from another tribe, what would happen? So you have a girl from tribe, let us say, tribe of Reuven. So she would be entitled to land that's labeled Reuven property. Upon her death, when her husband inherits her, if her husband was from the tribe of Shimon, so you would have property labeled Reuven property under the ownership of the tribe of Shimon. That's what the expression Hasovas Habal refers to. Therefore, so as to ensure that this doesn't take place when they entered Eretz Yisrael, this limitation was placed upon the generation entering Eretz Yisrael, so as to ensure that the tribes would remain of pure ownership, the girl, the Bas Yoreshes, was instructed to marry a mate, a husband, from the same tribe as her father. The Oymer, another pasuk says, V'lo yisosuv nachlo livnei Yisrael mimata lemata, and that there shall not be transfer of property from one tribe to another. The Omer, another pasuk says, V'lo sosuv nachlo mimata lemata acher. The same idea, that transfer of property shall not take place from one tribe to another. The Omer, a fourth pasuk is cited, V'alozer ben Aaron meis, V'yigbur oisei begivas Pinchas benoi. When Elozer, the son of Aaron, died, he was buried on the hill belonging to his son Pinchas. A little odd here that it's described as property belonging to Pinchas, his son. V'chi minayin l'Pinchas sheloi hoya loy l'Elozer. By saying property belonging to Pinchas, it seems to say that it's unique to Pinchas and property that was not owned by his father Elozer. So how could that be? From where does Pinchas get property that was not owned by his father Elo? Rather, l'melamed shenosa Pinchas isha umesa. What happened was that Pinchas had married a woman and she died, v'yorsha, and he inherited his wife. Of course, that would be an example of property that was never in the possession of his father of Elozer. V'oimer, usgoiv hoywid es yo'ir, vahiloi esrim v'sholosh orim be'eretz ha-gil'od. The pasuk says that Tzgoiv, name of an individual who bore a son Yoir, and the pasuk says that Yoir had 23 cities in the region of Gilad. V'chiminayin li-Yoir shelohoya aloi l'Tzgoiv. How could Yoir have property that his father did not have? Malameit shenosa Yoir isha. This teaches us that Yoir had married a woman. Umesa, she passed away. V'yorsha. As you can see, the source concluded. There is a long list of psukim that were cited, seemingly teaching us the very same thing. The ensuing Gemara will address this issue. What do I need all of these psukim for? At this point, though, we conclude our shiur for today.